Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode. It's also a 12 Days of the Comic Source episode. And today I'm going to be talking about Superman, the Man of Steel, number 109. So one of my favorite holiday traditions and holiday movies is the very classic It's a Wonderful Life, starring Jimmy Stewart. I think there's a lot of good lesson there for everybody to remember, especially the impact you can have, the positive impact you can have on other people's lives, even not knowing, you know, not realizing how much of a positive impact you're having. And so it's a good thing to remember around the holiday season, you know, especially this year. You know, don't sell yourself short because you may be impacting people that you don't even realize in a positive way. So it's such a great story, and it's an important lesson to remember all year round. But, you know, obviously at the holidays and It's a Wonderful Life, Frank Capra, you know, it always airs this time of year. And it is such a classic movie and a classic tale and a good lesson that, of course, they've done a Superman version of it, right? Like, somebody had to have done that at some point. What would the world be like without Superman and, you know, around the holidays? Because I think that story has probably been done multiple times. You know, what's the world like without Superman? Elseworlds, or what happens when Superman lands in Russia, you know, Red Sun, and all that kind of thing, or The Nail, very famous Elseworlds tale where the Kents don't rescue Kal-El because they get a flat tire because of a nail. So, but this is a little different. This is a little different situation here. It's from February 2001. So it's written by Mark Schultz. We have pencils by Duncan Rouleau. Inks are by Jaime Mendoza. Colors by Wildstorm FX. And letters by Ken Lopez. So it starts off, and Superman is at the workshop or the factory or whatever it is that John Henry Irons calls his factory, where he, you know, creates and repairs his steel suit. And we see Professor Emil Hamilton there as well, one of Superman's friends and allies. And he says, "Tell me when to lay off, Emil." And Emil's saying, "You know, I feel absolutely nothing," because Superman is basically firing his heat vision through this contraption, and it's coming out on the mechanical hand of Emil Hamilton. Now, he had lost his hand in some sort of laboratory accident or scientific experiment, if I remember correctly, and for a long time he had the mechanical hand, but here he has this giant robotic hand that's much more powerful than anything he's had before. And Irons is testing things. Clearly, this is a test to see this technology that Emil Hamilton has now can be of use to kind of find its limits. And Irons is saying, "Good Lord, the stress is still within the structural tolerance. You have one amazing appendage, Professor Hamilton." And Hamilton's saying, "You know, I wish I could take credit for it, but obviously this thing has more to do with the B-13 intervention than with my original invention, you know, of his hand." And Superman's like, "Yeah, so what's the story? I'd only given up looking for you a couple of weeks ago, and Professor Hamilton went missing during the Brainiac invasion of Metropolis." And Hamilton says, yeah, I really appreciate your concern, and I suppose I should have tried to alert you to my situation, but everything down there was just so interesting. So basically, what happened is Brainiac attacks the city, and Hamilton... He doesn't even remember that attack or being injured in that attack. He wakes up and he's got this new cybernetic arm. It's already been transmuted by these nanobots that live down underneath Metropolis, far, far underground. And he says, you know, there's all this technology down there, this B-13 technology. And being a scientist, you know, super curious. And he's like, "It was fascinating. I lost myself in this world of alien science. There's so many strange things going on down there." But then when word filtered down from the surface that there was some sort of phantom zone entity loose in Metropolis, I knew that I had to come back and help you, you know, and apply some of this newfound B-13 knowledge. And Iron says, "Yeah, it's lucky for us. And look, Professor, with your experience working with this new B-13 technology, you're very familiar with Kryptonian technology. Until you can get your own lab set up again, I'd love for you to set up shop here in the steelworks, you know, like John Henry Irons wants to tap into some of that knowledge that Professor Hamilton has." And Hamilton says, I'd be delighted. And Superman's kind of relieved. He's like, okay, great. It's glad, great, you know, good to have you back on board, Emil. I'm glad you're safe. You've always been a tremendous help. Now, if you excuse me, you know, I've got some things to take care of. And he flies off. And Irons comments on how distracted Superman has seemed lately. Ever since Luthor's presidential victory, Superman just seems preoccupied. And Emil says, what are you talking about? And Irons says, never mind. Let me give you a tour and show you what we have here. And he leads him over to this this meteorite that Irons has found. And apparently it had crashed somewhere near Metropolis, and Superman brought it to Henry Irons and the Steelworks. And Hamilton's asking for more information about it. And Henry Irons says, yeah, it's a gift from Big Blue. It's a very remarkable meteor. It's got this unique combination of iron ore that has the ability to disrupt both psychic and electromagnetic transmissions. And I suspect that eventually we'll be able to find some pretty cool applications for it. But the mystery that you may find interesting is that when I was monitoring the Phantom Zone, when Superman had gone in, I accidentally picked up some very distant radio signals broadcasting in what sounded like a Kryptonian language. So it quickly got lost in all the zone interference. But it doesn't make sense. Like, who could be out there transmitting Kryptonian radio signals? Like, Krypton has been destroyed, right? And Emil says, yeah, you know, I see you have a broadband amplifier, and it's connected to the new Fortress's portal monitors. It's pretty interesting. And so he volunteers. He says, I Dr. Irons, I'd love to explore this phenomenon more and see if there's something I can find out about this radio signal, where it's coming from, that sort of thing. So meanwhile, Clark's at home. He's flipping through the channels, and it seems Luthor's on every channel. It says that he's already begun the process of interviewing candidates for his cabinet, and he's a pledge to members of Congress that he'll be open-minded to cooperation. And, you know, Clark is just, you can just feel the frustration and the, I don't want to say the despondency, but the disappointment, I'll say, that a criminal like Luthor was able to run for president and win. Obviously, in our world, in the political climate of now, I mean, this story was 19, 20 years ago, a bit different. It's easy to see how, in the age of social media, somebody could pull the wool over somebody's eyes. Somebody could appeal to the masses that they're an outsider. They're not going to, you know, be of the same sort of self-perpetuating, self-aggrandizing, self-promoting political machine that's been in charge of our government for so long. They're just there, it seems, to line their own pockets and to be reelected, you know, power for power's sake. And when somebody comes in and says, hey, I'm going to drain the swamp, I'm not a politician, I'm an outsider, and I'm one of you, and taps into that anger that people feel, obviously we've seen that can be a successful way to get in. But it doesn't mean that person's going to be good at actually running the government. I mean, that's the problem when you're an outsider and you don't know how to work together. You don't know how to cooperate. It can lead to a lot of bad stuff. And I would almost look to this presidency of Lex Luthor as a perfect example of things that happened in this country years later. And if only everybody had been reading the Superman books at the time that Lex was president, it's kind of prescient. So anyway, Lois calls for Clark to come to bed as he's flipping through the channels. And we even see a report from GBS News that Luthor's approached the Justice League about setting up a LexCorp program and having the Justice League work directly for the government, you know, handing out vaccines and helping to repair things and help with natural disasters and things like that. Luthor definitely wants to establish a close relationship with the metahuman community, because Luthor believes that the metahumans can definitely benefit the underprivileged. So as the news person is signing off, she's saying, our coverage of America's love affair with its philanthropist president-elect continues after this break, and Superman has fallen asleep. But all of a sudden, there's a big flash of light. Somebody says, hello, Superman. It's Lyra Lee of the Linear Men. Superman's wondering if he's dreaming, and she says, well, maybe that's for you to decide, but if you are, it's much more of a nightmare. The Linear Men have been on the ropes lately. There's been some terrible disruptions in the time stream, and in order to, you know, restore the proper necessary flow of our reality, we need your help. We're fighting this interloper who's ripping our timeline to shreds, and we're losing. And Superman's like, losing what? And she says, the future is without you. And it all started here with this political victory of Lex Luthor and your reaction to it. You've got this despondency, you've got this sense of failure, this loss of hope. You know, you're so down, you've got this sense of hopelessness, and all of a sudden we've seen the future, and this future has no Superman. And then all of a sudden there's a bit of a flash, and Superman is in his costume now rather than being in the clothes he was wearing as Clark Kent. And Superman wants to know what she's done, and she says, well, not what have I done, but when. This is your apartment 15 years in the future. And I'm convinced that if I can convince you that this reaction you're having to Luthor's public acclaim is causing harm and it's not an option, then maybe we can save the future. You can't react. You can't respond the way you're responding. It's too destructive. And so then they move on to where Lois is, and Clark's calling out to her, Lois, what's wrong? And literally says she can't hear us or see us. We're just these ghostly observers from a vantage point outside time, and I just want to show you. So Superman asks what's wrong with her, and she said, well, she's missing Superman. The whole world is missing Superman. And Clark says, but I'm not going anywhere. And Lyra says, we're all going, right? And all our emotional states affect the decisions that take us there. You know, that's why you can't give up. You can't give up hope. Your emotional state right now in the present time is heading you in a very bad direction. So Lois soon meets with Jimmy and Perry, and Clark's really taken aback by how terrible they look, and Lyra Lee says, yeah, well, they're doing the best they can without their Superman. And what we learn as those three talk is they all apparently work for Luthor now as his PR, his marketing people. And Natasha Irons shows up, and they call her the Iron Maiden, and she's just as much of a genius now as she is in our current timeline. And she has created these special nanotech cameras that they can wear in their eyes like contact lenses. By Jimmy, Perry, and Lois wearing these, they're hoping that they can transmit some details back to the rest of the world about this deal that Luthor is about to sign, that they think if people can see the real Luthor, that the world won't be bowing down to his, you know, quote unquote benevolent rule. He can broadcast the truth and free the world. And Perry tells Natasha, hey, your uncle would be, you know, really proud if only we hadn't lost him so early in the struggle. And Lois says, that's enough. Let's not talk about that. We've all lost people. We need to wrap this up quickly before we get caught. You know, after 6 years of playing the loyal PR flax and gaining Luthor's trust, Jimmy, Perry, and I, we're in the best position to be present when Luthor makes his dirty little secret known to this representative from Polkelstan. That's where they're headed. So Superman's surprised. He's asking literally, they work for LexCorp? She says, well, yeah, pretty much everybody in the world works for LexCorp. They didn't really have much of a choice. And again, this is the consequence of a world where Superman lost heart and disappeared and left. He traveled to his home beyond the stars. He never came back. And Superman says, well, even if I am gone, how could all this happen? How could Luthor amass so much power? You know, what about the JLA? What about all the other heroes? And Lira Lee says, well, you know, that's the thing about this temporal business. It's all about checks and balances. And you were the balance against which Luther was weighed. And when you don't return, then everything tips in his favor. He goes unchecked. Luther always understood that real power lies in economic control. And by the time he stepped down from his second term as president, he had accumulated so much control and put so much infrastructure in place that LexCorp basically became the de facto rulers of the world. You know, he solidified his position. He was seen as this great world leader in a great war, and so many of Earth's great heroes were lost as they defended the planet, and others were sacrificed because of the strategies of Luther. He was always thinking one step ahead of them. And then some of them, they serve Luther's purposes as well as they serve the Earth. I mean, at some point, you've got to join up and say, you know, if you can't beat them, join them and try to do the best you can and elicit change from the inside. It doesn't always work, but, you know, what other choice do you have? And Lirley goes on to tell Superman, it was the return of his own, come from her distant dark future, holding the key to complete control over the B-13 technologies that brought ultimate victory to Earth and the global supremacy to House Luthor. So, you know, the fruits of the war, a mangled solar system, bereft of its most distant members, and the one guy who balanced out Luthor is gone, and now everything is sort of choked off by him, and everybody must have what only Luthor can deliver, which is the B-13 technologies that we talked about at the beginning of the issue. And, you know, once Luthor controlled that and everybody felt like they had to have it, you know, it's supply and demand, and it just grew his power base to the point where he basically rules the world. So Superman says, wow, so he finally realized his dream of world domination, right? But it couldn't have been all the metahumans that were lost in the war. And she said, no, not all. Some retired. Some were forced to retire under the carefully constructed laws that first were drafted under Luther's presidency and eventually evolved to the point of sort of outlawing people in masks. And just a very few, like Batman, they've disappeared and they're still resisting in the underground. But, you know, many have simply been bought out. They see the advantages of siding with Luthor. Like, again, like I was saying, if you can't beat him, join him. At least if I am not actively fighting Luthor, he'll let me continue to, you know, stop street level crime or stop natural disasters. He'll let me keep operating, you know. The scene shifts and literally and Superman are now in Polakstan, and she's saying, right now the only real hope lies with the quartet of very fragile normals working from within the system, and I've advanced us 24 hours to Luther's private green space and the secret deal that Lois was talking about. And Luther's right-hand guy is telling the PR people, Lois and Perry and Jimmy, hey, look sharp, the summit's about to begin. We want to make sure we have nothing but glowing press to say. And Lois says, oh, don't worry, Mr. Blotz. We know exactly what Luther's going to be doing, and we want people to understand and appreciate. And we see the little nanotech camera in her eye. So Lex shows up, introduces himself to the representative from Polakstan, Colonel Hull, I guess her name is. Luther says, you know, I'm happy we've come to terms. And her reply is, today we change the world. And Luther says, yeah, today we change Polakstan. Tomorrow the world, but I like your zeal. And Luther hands a rifle to Colonel Hull. And she says, what's this for? And he says, well, I want to commemorate our little agreement by having you represent your country in this special hunt that I prepared, a unique hunt, one fit for only the global elite. And somebody comes from a bunker off in the distance leading this Siberian tiger who is connected to a chain at the throat. And Luther says, I give you the last Siberian tiger left on the planet, and we're going to kill it, basically. And that's what they do. And Colonel Hull says, well, that really wasn't much of a sport, right? I mean, the tiger walked right up, they shot it, you know, horrible. And Luther says, "Sport? Who said anything about sport? I just wanted another rug and the thrill of exterminating a rival predator." And I don't know how you could even see it as a rival predator. I mean, last Siberian tiger, you know, doesn't have a mate, doesn't really have a reason to be alive. That being said, it's a gorgeous, majestic animal, and Luther kills it without a second thought. So yeah, he's pretty evil in this story for sure. And he goes on to say to Colonel Hull, "Yeah, enough bonding ritual. It was very wise of your supreme leader to agree to allow the benefits of the B-13 technology to come to your people." And Colonel Hull doesn't want to hear any of Luther's BS. You know, she knows he's just trying to blow sunshine up her butt. She says, "Luther, how about you don't yank my chain? Let's not pretend you're about benefiting my people. This is about you and me and the leader. We negotiated favorable conditions because we learned that Pokolstan was the last link you needed to get your global power grid up and running. And we had what you wanted, and you paid us for it, basically." And Luther says, "Yeah, you definitely played your cards right, and you've done quite well for yourselves." And she says, "Yeah, and LexCorp International as well, right?" And Luther laughs and says, "Yeah, for LexCorp International as well. You know, I really like you, Colonel. Let's let the little people get in line behind us. You know, we're the elite. We're the ones that should rule." And then he says, "Now, pardon me a minute. There is one aspect of this carefully arranged summit that needs to be addressed." And he calls out to his personal bodyguard, you know, the heroes that agreed to work for him. Again, if you can't beat him, join him. So he says, "Booster, Plastic Man, Huntress, please detain my conniving public relations staff. He knows all about the nanotech cameras that were implanted, and you can completely see that the reason Luther is doing this right in front of this colonel is because he wants her to realize how ruthless he is." And he says, "Watch, Colonel, and learn what happens to little people when they play with the powerful. You know, there are always secrets within secrets, and what they didn't realize but should have was that their pathetic plot couldn't escape my detection. And on some level, you must have known that. Surveillance nanobots, that's LexCorp technology. I know where it all is. You know, I'm able to trace it, including those from your ingenious retinal cameras. And there are always secrets within secrets. You should remember that. But it's a real shame your Iron Maiden will never know just how she messed up and what the consequences were. Booster, detonate the explosives." And Booster hits a button on his gauntlet, and we see the ironworks factory exploding in the background. So Luther goes on to say, "You know, I kind of expected this behavior from Perry White and Jimmy Olsen, but your lack of loyalty, Lois, man, that's disappointing. I expected better of you, you know. I expected you to have that survival instinct, unlike Jimmy and Perry. And, you know, the media is just going to say that you all were the victims of the rampaging tiger, you know, the tiger that we killed." You know, Luther's going to spin it again to be the hero. Lois, Jimmy, and Perry, they're going to be a footnote, you know. The story's going to read, you know, "Killed by the last remaining saber-toothed tiger, but before he could harm anyone else, Luther came in and saved the day by shooting him." He says, "Yeah, people love those kind of stories." So, on the bright side, though, I do have you where I've always wanted you. I own you, body and soul. So, either you join me completely, or you're going to be joining your fallen comrades. And Superman, again, in this ghostly form, is watching this, and he says, "No, I've got to help her. I've got to get to them." And he flies toward them with literally reminding her, "You don't actually exist here, Superman. Besides, this is just a personal tragedy, one that's meant to pull your heartstrings. But I'm going to show you the real tragedy, the great tragedy to come." And they're transported out to space, and they see that the entire world has been subjugated. And she tells Superman, "Lois and Jimmy and Perry, they never realized it, but Luther's deal with Pokolstan really was the beginning of the end." And Superman says, "Well, I've never even heard of Pokolstan." He said, "You will eventually, with the B-13 tendrils extending up into Hull's land, and the B-13 power grid complete, you know, they start to become much more powerful. And when that happens, the charade is complete and the ultimate plot is revealed. It's a conspiracy that even escaped Luther himself. Once all the connections were made and the internal power of the earth itself is tapped, it doesn't matter what Luther had planned. All his schemes of glory, they're for nothing because all life has become forfeit. The earth becomes the planetary body and perpetual energy source for the most horrific of future dynasties, the rule of the, you know, B-13 aliens themselves. And of course, the scourge of the time continuum, or the scourge of this shatters the time continuum, and that's what we're trying to prevent. And Superman's like, wait, so you're saying the linear men want to try to alter the future by cheering me up, by changing my emotional state? And Lee says, yeah, well, we told you we're losing, and that's how desperate we are. But we are compassionate, too. We're giving you a chance to heal yourself, keep your head in the game, make the difference yourself. It's really that simple. You're such a special being, Kal-El. The Earth, the universe revolves around you, and you being a symbol of hope. And when it comes time for you to make your decision, don't abandon your planet. If you do, the steps the linear men will be forced to take are going to be very drastic indeed. So, Merry Christmas, Superman. And he's transported back to his sofa in Metropolis, and he's laying there. And as he kind of falls back asleep, he's you know, again, wondering if it was all a dream. Meanwhile, back at the ironworks, Emil Hamilton has succeeded in his experiments and his testing, and he's yelling, "Dr. Irons, Dr. Irons, come quickly, it's unbelievable." And John Henry Irons shows up where the meteor is, and he's asking Professor Hamilton what's going on. He's like, "I did it. I was able to use the ore and the psychic and EM disruption properties and filter out all that phantom zone interference and then amplify with the broadband and listen." And what they hear is Kryptonian language. And John Henry Irons recognizes it for what it's for right away. He says, "That's Kryptonian." And Emil responds, "Yeah, you're right. Somewhere deep within the Phantom Zone, someone's broadcasting in the Kryptonian language. So somewhere out there, a Krypton exists with its very own portal to the Phantom Zone. And we may be able to give Superman the greatest Christmas gift ever. You know, they may be able to tell him that Krypton, all of Krypton is not gone." So they're pretty excited about that. But obviously that's not the main focus of the story. The main focus is what the world is like without Superman. And even beyond that, how the world can be changed just by Superman sort of changing his outlook and his behavior. Again, he always tries to be hopeful. He always tries to be upbeat. And I think he succeeds, you know, in that the vast majority of the time. But what this shows is that he can never let his guard down, even for a moment. So many people look to Superman, and it's true of all of us. I mean, it might not be Superman. We might look to Superman, this fictional character, as inspiration, but it's important to think about the people that we do look up to, the role models. It's important for us to be role models. If you have, you know, children or young people that you interact with on a day-to-day basis, because like I said before, you never can predict what kind of positive impact and how great of an impact you may be having on others. So you should always lead your life in such a way that you're thinking that there's a little person watching you, you know, like a 5 or 6 year old watching you. And what kind of example would you want to set for a person like that, a person who's just learning about the world? You know, a child who you're trying to teach compassion and caring and social responsibility and that sort of thing. So, cool story. Just the fact that the despondency that Superman is feeling over the Lex Luthor presidency can lead to such a catastrophic future really speaks to the impact that, in story that Superman really has on the DC universe. And I would go, you know, further outside of the story to think about what the impact that Superman has, you know, in our real life. And I, as much as I don't like talking about them, giving them any more attention than they've already gotten, the Superman movies from Zack Snyder are a perfect example. You know, movies that could have inspired and could have given hope and could have affected actual change in the real world. You know, it might not have been a huge impact, but it could have done. But instead, we got these dark, brooding movies that are just, you know, to Zack Snyder, you know, pieces of art, pieces of his vision, quote unquote. And I think that's a mistake. I think that we have a responsibility, or those that that tell stories have a responsibility to inspire and to reflect, to have their stories reflect on society and reflect the good things about society and remind us and teach us lessons. And, you know, I talk all the time about how much I think the stories and the make-believe and the fantasy and the fictions of a society, all the things that that society makes up, all their make-believe stories, whatever they create, really says so much about who that society is and who that society wants to be. And it's, again, more important than ever right now, especially in this holiday season. So, again, great story. Great to think that Superman, just because he's feeling bad and obsessing over the presidency and how could Lex Luthor have won, that could eventually lead to this dystopian future. So hopefully with that knowledge, whether it was a dream or whether it really happened, hopefully Superman realizes he's got to pull himself out of the funk and bring back some of that feeling of hope, be a symbol of hope, and prevent anything from happening like it did in the reality that literally showed Superman. So once again, I wish everybody happy holidays, Merry Christmas, whatever you celebrate. Be safe, be responsible, but enjoy yourself. Have a wonderful holiday season. And thanks for listening, everybody. Really enjoying bringing you all this content over the 12 days of the Comic Source. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.